Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual. Hey, this is Veronica Monet, and with me today is Amanda Brooks. Amanda, are you there? Amanda, are you on the line?
Yes.
Hey, girl.
Hey.
How are you?
Good. And how are you?
Well, let's see. I'm having a great day. I'm very excited about interviewing you, Amanda. I'm thinking a lot of my listeners don't know who the heck you are, so
probably
I'm
going
to give you a chance to introduce yourself, but first of all, I just want to say I'm a big admirer of yours. I think you're smart, sexy, and incredibly accomplished, and I love your book, The Internet Escorts Guide. I'm like, wow, I didn't even know it was legal to talk about these things. So, do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about your educational and career background?
Okay, my name is Amanda Brooks, as she said, and I have a college degree in photography and writing, so I'm not using the photography right now. Born and raised in Texas, I am currently living in Las Vegas. I've been a sex worker, stripper, and independent escort throughout my 20s, and I'm currently writing a series of books for Internet Escorts, the Internet Escorts Handbook series, and the book Veronica is referring to is Book 1, The Foundation, Basic Mental, Emotional, and Physical Considerations in Escort Work. That's the first book that's out. Book number 2, Marketing and Advertising Online, is due out this summer. And I actually met Veronica last year at the Desiree Alliance Conference in San Francisco. And she gave the keynote address, and it was just so impressive. I wished you could have gone on for another hour or so. I mean, you only spoke for 20 or 30 minutes, but it was not long enough.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm blushing now.
Oh, it was great. You said you made so many great points.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, what gave you the idea, first of all, that you could tell people how to be an escort?
Well, I don't consider these books a how-to specifically. I consider it a reference for the business.
Okay.
And it's options. I mean, basically, it's not like I tell an escort, you must do this, except in matters of safety. But beyond
right.
that, I just try to provide as many options as possible because I realize everyone is an individual and everyone's situation is different. That being said, what got me started is when I became an escort in 2002, I had a mentor, and of course I asked her all these questions, but I'm a reader, and there weren't really any good books for escorts. I mean, there was Turning Pro by Magdalene Meretrick, and at the time, that was the closest anyone had come to discussing internet escort work.
I've been in the sex industry for about 20 years, and when people first started asking me, I was like, I'm sorry, it's illegal for anybody to give that information out. Then Magdalena came out with her book, and I started referring people to her book, and I'd say, I don't know how she's able to do this without going to jail. But anyway, the book's out there, and there's no lawsuits against me telling you about a book, so go read a book, and don't bother me with those questions. And then your book came out, and then I started saying, I got a much better book to refer you to now.
Thank you.
No offense to Magdalena. Her book was great, but hers is an overview of the entire sex industry, both legal and illegal aspects of it, whereas yours is very specifically targeting what I consider mid to high range escorting.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah, and people don't usually call me to find out about walking the streets or how to work a massage parlor because I know nothing about that anyway.
Neither do I. So, I certainly couldn't do an overview book like Magdalena did. I mean, I have her book and I love it, but
Me too.
Yeah, I could never do an overview like she did because I have not been as adventurous as she has.
No, I know. I've been far too greedy. I just wanted to go kind of, to the top. Top pay scale, not top as in, better than anything else that's out there, but just that it pays better.
Yes, well, of course.
Yeah. Show me the money.
Oh, go ahead.
No, Amanda.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I said, show me the money. That's a reference to an old Tom Cruise movie.
Oh, yes. I never did see that movie, but I know a lot of people see that line from it.
I'm kind of trying to figure out if maybe the movie came out before you were born. How old are you? Well, Tom Cruise is still a young guy, isn't he?
Relatively speaking. I think he's only in his 40s.
Yeah, well. I don't know. I'm still in my 40s, and I don't feel that young. So, okay, this is a huge transition, doll. You're in college. You majored in photography and writing. I'm sure your parents are really proud about your first book, right?
My mom, we've discussed it. I don't know that she's proud necessarily, but she supports it. She's actually far more worried about what will happen to me being in the public eye than she was with me being in sex work, to be honest.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I can understand that. I can understand that. I just recently got interviewed for a local television station.
Mm-hmm.
And it was after the Elliot Spitzer scandal.
Oh, yes.
And I got, just, I don't know if you've seen the internet, but there's like, if you put Elliot Spitzer's name and my name in there, pages and pages of Google and blogs come up. So I got quoted in a lot of things, including API, Associated Press International. So anyway, so this local television station interviews me, and I'm thinking that they just kind of want to get my professional take on the whole scandal.
Mm-hmm.
But what they were really trying to do was some investigative reporting to see if when I go out to speak at the colleges and universities, I'm actually trying to teach people how to be an escort.
Oh, yeah.
So, I agreed to the interview, and then when we did the first interview in the studio, I realized the angle they're going for here, and I'm thinking, it's too late. I can't back out now,
mm-hmm.
right? Because they think they're sinking their teeth into me. So basically, I just had to go forward and go, okay, well, I know I'm not doing anything wrong. Come on in and interview the students, interview the professor, and they did. We went down to University of Pacific. But it really made me feel paranoid. I thought, it's amazing. I am now completely legal. I haven't mm-hmm. done any escorting for 4 years. And I was more worried about the whole idea of, freedom of speech. Like, what are we allowed to say in this country?
Not a lot. I consulted with a lawyer while I was writing book one, and I've had to be very, very careful in what I say and how I say it, because, again, I can't be seen as a recruiting tool that's just right off the start, but also I can't be telling people how to do anything that could possibly in some way cause them harm, whether they use or misuse my information. So that's why I refer to it as a reference series and not a how-to, and why I'm trying to write it as a reference book and not a how-to book series, because I really, really cannot, I certainly cannot tell people how to be an escort. I mean, it's really what they want to know, and sometimes I get questions I really cannot answer it.
I know.
It bothers me, because I would love to give the information, but I cannot do it.
It's really sad when you think about, a lot of these people are going to wind up going and doing these things without help, without
mm-hmm.
guidance, without information, and possibly getting themselves into situations that are harmful or hurtful or, scary.
Yeah, it would reduce harm to be able to share this information openly as opposed to not being able to share it and cause more problems.
Yeah. But it's interesting to me, the cultural approach. It's like, we don't mind, because all you have to do to see what the law really feels about the sex industry is see how they enforce it and where. So
mm-hmm.
if you are sitting on some guy's lap and, bouncing up and down on his lap until he has an orgasm in his pants in a strip club somewhere, you're perfectly legal. You're not going to go to jail, and neither are the people that own that strip club.
It depends. It depends if your top is off or not. I know that from stripping in Dallas. They would go through their various crackdowns, you know, in
yes.
election cycles, and they would arrest girls for dancing and touching themselves, like touching their breasts.
And you know, it really depends on the city, doesn't it? Because like in San
yes.
Francisco, of course, we have full nudity in a lot
mm-hmm.
of the clubs, and girl acts, and you know, I've been to like the Mitchell Brothers on O'Farrell Street.
Mhm.
Yeah, and watch the girls there, and I mean they do like dildo shows and girl showers, all kinds of stuff. But those clubs are really connected politically, so that they get a high degree of protection and very little heat from law enforcement.
That's what I understand as well. And definitely, it's definitely a lot wilder than my experience in the South.
Yes. Can I say you just have a really delightful Southern Belle accent?
Thank you.
If that's okay to say. I think it's charming. I love it. It's very sophisticated. So what states in the South did you work in?
Just Texas.
Texas. Oh, wow. Okay, so Texas is pretty conservative, isn't it?
On the surface, yes, but underneath, it has a very thriving adult industry. I mean, every sector of the industry, except porn, I don't know that they shoot a lot of porn in Texas, but everything else you can imagine is thriving in Texas. So it's only on the surface, which kind of makes sense.
Huh.
You know, all that repression is on the surface, and underneath, it's very busy.
Underneath is very busy, huh?
Yes.
Interesting. Well, I thought that Texas, actually, I just had Lisa Lawless on here last week, and we were talking about how Texas had these really prohibitive laws against how many dildos you could own.
Oh, yes.
And I guess they recently changed that law or something, but some woman became the test case recently, went to jail because she owned more than 5 dildos. And I guess the law reads that you have to sell the dildos as a novelty item. You can't actually teach the women what they're for.
Mm-hmm.
Now, don't you think that's kind of interesting? Because it goes back to this whole concept, which I kind of just put it under the don't ask, don't tell umbrella. It's like, yes, we would like to have sex toys, we'd like to have strippers, and we'd like to have prostitution, but please don't talk about it.
It goes back somewhat to that, although the whole dildo thing, my personal take on it, of course, this is, I guess, a little radical for some people, but I personally think that maybe the men are slightly threatened by it, and that might be another reason for making the laws.
Oh, I like that. No, I do. Well, see, actually, to tell you the truth, I think the reason that you can get into more trouble for talking about things like prostitution or escorting than actually doing it, because you can. I mean, I have a girlfriend, Norma Jean Almodovar.
Oh, yes.
She spent 2 years in prison because of a phone call.
Yes.
And as long as she was just escorting and, you know, having sex for money,
mm-hmm.
she wasn't going to go to jail. Is when she talked about how to do it to another female officer, because I don't know if you know, Norma Jean used to be a police officer.
Yeah, I've read her book.
Yeah. And she went from a police officer to a call girl, and as a matter of fact, she wrote a book called Cops to Call Girl. So it was really interesting. I mean, basically, sex for money wasn't the problem. It was teaching anybody else how to do it. So one of her former police officer friends set her up with a phone call and said, oh, I think I'd like to do that. And so one phone call later, Norma Jean was in prison for 2 years.
Which is such a shame. And it does make you wonder, though, if the laws are set up a way of looking at it could be seen as setting up these things to keep women in their place, because women who become prostitutes traditionally find a freedom that they don't normally have in society as wives and mothers.
Yes, that's why That's why I got into it. I was a college graduate. I had worked for 7 years in corporate America, and I'd been a feminist activist. It was the last thing on my mind, and then I met a woman. I met this woman, and she was, like, so empowered. And I thought, wow, nobody told me that. I thought it was, you know, all about, I don't know, drugs and seedy dark motels or something. And I meet this woman, and she's, you know, a gym rat and health nut. And got three kids and a husband. Going, okay, well, this is a lot different than the stereotype.
Yes, it is. And people definitely don't realize it. It's like the real secret of escort work. The real secret is not why do men visit us. The real secret is not why do we come make, you know, why do they come back or what sex secrets do we know. The real secret is just that. It's not the stereotypes, and it can be a very positive force in your life.
I have met women who have gone from being therapists, nurses, school teachers even. I don't know if you remember the, probably about 5-6 years ago, Shannon Williams was a school teacher in Oakland who got arrested for prostitution.
Oh, I vaguely remember hearing about it, yeah.
Yeah, she was all over the news for a brief period. I actually went on, you know what, it was 2003, so that would have been 5 years ago. Yeah, and they had me on Fox News. I debated Congressman John Kasich on his Heartland Fox series because he was like going, school teachers can't be escorts.
And why not?
And I was going, obviously they are. So maybe you need to go back to school. The word's not can. she was just supplementing the paltry amount of money that they paid her to be a school teacher.
I mean, if you want to stop the school teachers from being escorts or from posing online for, you know, adult pictures, pay them more.
Uh-huh, exactly.
Exactly.
Really,
I mean,
you think it's a really important job, back it up with a paycheck.
Yes.
I just got so tired of little pats on the head and roses on Secretary's Day and these, you know, I get awards. They'd be nicely framed and I could hang them on my wall in my little cubicle. Yay for me, I'm employee of the month.
So which is more degrading? I mean, honestly, working your butt off for little recognition and little pay, or just being yourself and getting treated like a princess?
Oh, yeah. I know. Well, that's the part nobody wants to know, isn't it? Just how well some of these men can treat you. That's kind of, I think, it'd be scary. It'd be like, oh, my God. And this was, I think, the real shocker for me, because I was married almost the whole time that I was working as an escort. And I had, I think, an exceptional marriage in a lot of ways, but I also had some of the same symptoms and problems that a lot of other marriages have. You know, there were times when we were angry at each other and we hadn't worked on our problems, and so the sex life would suffer. Which I think is just a pretty natural thing. If you can't creatively and proactively deal with any kind of anger and resentment in a relationship, you're going to have a deleterious effect on your sex life. And we ended up getting into therapy and working on all kinds of stuff, and we're actually, we've been divorced now for 4 years and still really, really good friends and part-time lovers. So we got past that, but we went through stages where, you know, it was problematic and it was hard. And I would go out on these professional dates, and really, that I was just talking to a reporter the other day, and I go, oh, what's it like? I go, you know, it's dating, only you get paid for it. You know, you meet these men on the internet. I go, who doesn't? I mean, you know. 18-year-old kids meet their dates on the internet nowadays. Everybody's dating on the internet.
Yeah.
So, but they would treat me like a queen, just like you said.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, that's one thing I also discovered very early on with escort work is the more they had to pay for it, the better they treated you.
And why do you think that is, Amanda?
I think it's because it might be a cultural thing, an American society thing, where if we pay for something that's very expensive, we believe it truly is valuable, and we take care of it, or we tend to take care of it.
Yeah.
I mean, we are a society of consumers.
We are. We are, and I don't know what your take on this. For me, high-end escorting was very much about being able to play class games. You need to be able to know what the class values were. And a very interesting game for me to play because I actually came from a poor family.
Mm-hmm.
And but I'm a quick study. I learned. It's like, oh, wow. Okay, so, you know, this is the kind of clothing and the kind of hairstyling and makeup and even, you know, like, stay away from breast implants and don't get those fake nails because you will not make as much money.
Well, that's true. You do have to appear worth the rate that you're charging. If you don't appear worth that rate, you're not going to get repeat clientele, and clients are going to let other clients know you're not really worth it.
Yeah,
first impressions do definitely matter.
I like to look at it as not so much worth, because I think we're all equal and we're all worth the same. And I love what the, you know, a street prostitute would always say to somebody like me, honey, you and I do the same thing for a living. And I go, absolutely, of course I do.
True.
I'm just working a different side of the street. And consequently, our lives don't have much similarities, because I'm going to be, you know, riding around in limos and having people kiss my feet, literally.
<Yes. laughs>
Whereas maybe if I'm working the street, I'm going to get beat up or something. And certainly, I'm sure, you know, you've probably never encountered that kind of treatment either. I know I haven't.
No.
No, it's just completely foreign. It just doesn't happen.
Well, and that was my goal. I mean, I certainly didn't want it to happen, so I took steps to make sure it wouldn't happen.
Yes.
I mean, I think that's one of the points in my book series, and I'll get more into that in book three when I go into screening, but it doesn't have to be horrible. It doesn't have to be bad. If you're smart, you can take care of yourself pretty easily.
Don't you think that a lot of this is really just the same common sense that a woman needs to use in dating for free?
I certainly think so. Definitely. In fact, a reviewer recently reviewed book one, and she's like, change the title and it should be a dating manual for women.
Exactly. And in the spirit of that, let's just for a minute switch to that, and just, we won't talk about escorting, because we know that if you and I are talking about how-to escorting instead of writing about it, all of a sudden that puts us in a totally different legal category.
Yes.
But just for a minute, let's talk about dating for free. What are the things that a woman who wants to date men for free on the Internet, what are some of the main things that she needs to consider to safeguard herself, to be safe?
First, she definitely needs to check out the guy. I mean, she really needs to do some of the same essential screening that an escort does. And she also needs to spend time reading his emails to see if he's paying attention to what she says, is he dashing off a form letter, does he display any type of aggressiveness at all in his emails or any type of weirdness, or does he come across does something trigger, you know, a little red light in her head when she reads his email? I mean, she needs to pay attention to all these things, even if she's meeting him in a public place.
So,
that's for starters.
should she think about getting, what have they got, some of those online detective services where you can run somebody's vitals and try to find out where they live and all that stuff?
You can buy those services, but just an email address, a name, a phone number, you can do so much with Google or like Zaba search, and you can get a real good feel for the person for free before you even proceed, you know, further down the line.
So with Google, you just put in their email address?
Yeah. And if that doesn't work, I usually erase from the app and email and leave their handle, And that will usually bring stuff up because they almost always will sign up for some sort of service like a message board or something and use the same handle, and you'll be able to find it.
Wow. Well, that's cool.
Yeah, and then you can get a sense of their personality and what they're doing and everything. And it's also a very good thing, you know, if you discovered, for instance, like the guy also posts on, say, a Thai prostitution message board. Well, you can find that out really fast.
And if he has, then maybe you don't want to see him, huh?
Yeah, I think most women would say no to that one.
Yeah. Interesting. And then what about the first time you agreed to, how long should you wait? Like, I was dating a guy on the internet for about 2 years, and then we started talking on the phone for about 1 year. So
wow.
We invested 3 years into our dating, if you want to call it that, but getting acquainted with each other,
mm-hmm.
and before we ever met in person. And I still had some shocks. So what do you suggest?
I guess it depends on your level of comfort or, say, your goal. If you just want to meet somebody to go out and have drinks and dancing with one night, obviously you just need to get a sense of safety from the person, and you need to check them out a bit. But, I mean, if you're going for an actual relationship, yeah, I think you should spend some time pen-palling until you get to the point where you just have to talk to them on the phone, and then you go from there.
Well,
I think everybody has a slightly different clock.
I think you're right. We need to know what our agenda is. In my case, I actually wanted to have a long-term, intimate, romantic relationship with this person. And
mm-hmm.
And what I found when I met in person was just that there were certain things that you don't talk about on the phone or in an email that you find out when you're in the same room with another person.
Mm-hmm.
And it might just be things like, you know, how they keep their house, or do they pay the bill, or do they open the door for you, or do they, you know, I don't know. Do you know what I mean?
Just, yeah, it's the
kind
final screening.
Huh?
It's the final screening.
It's the body language and mm-hmm. maybe just those little polite niceties or not so polite interactions that we never, you know, you're never going to tell somebody, well, yeah. I belch after I eat, or, you know, it just doesn't come up in conversation.
No, it doesn't. And when it happens, you're like, oh, God.
I thought you were perfect. Well, what do you suggest for women if they're worried that they're going to have that big letdown? I mean, like, I have to tell you, that's part of it, because a relationship over the phone and on the online can be so rewarding, and sometimes the reality of living in close proximity to somebody can be such a letdown. You almost feel like, just why don't we just stick with the internet?
I can understand that, because I've started to I just recently ended a long-term relationship myself, and I've started trying to meet some guys online, not for anything serious, because I'm not there yet. But even so, I've had a couple of disappointments already, especially one where he didn't look anything like the pictures he submitted. And he, you know, he was short, which was just awful for me. And he looked like a kid, and it just...
Isn't that horrible?
Yeah, it was just timely.
I swear to God, he looked like Sting in his pictures. And I personally find Sting attractive. Maybe other people don't, I don't know. But I do. I think he's hot.
Mm-hmm.
So I was all expected this hot guy. Fortunately, my girlfriend went with me, so I'd have an excuse to leave early. That's probably chicken, huh?
Well, it's very awkward. How do you say, this really
wow.
isn't what I thought?
Wow. Yeah, it wasn't so much that he didn't look like his pictures as it was that he had all of these... you know what, I guess if you're playing poker, you call them tells, these little twitches and facial expressions that communicated a lack of confidence and an inability to really be socially comfortable. So what had come across in the email as being poetic and insightful suddenly seemed quite stupid.
Yeah. Well, it was, I bet it was him. He probably felt much more confident when he was writing down his thoughts and when he's having to make them up on the fly talking to a person.
Do you think
I'm certainly much more articulate on paper than I am in person.
Do you think that we're having an epidemic of that with Gen X and Gen Y? Just because, I mean, people spend so much time text messaging and doing the internet thing that they're not actually meeting face-to-face or interacting face-to-face as much as they used to?
I don't really know, to be honest with you. It's not, I haven't ever considered the question.
Ah.
That's an interesting one.
Well, I wasn't the first one to pose it. I'd like to take credit for it, but it's been out there for a little bit. Just the idea that we're becoming so dependent upon our telephones and our computers that, you know, people have even kind of lost the art of dating now. They just hook up.
Mm-hmm. I will admit, yes, I miss the interaction. I hate the fact that I spend all day behind my computer. I miss the human interaction, and that's what I loved with escort work was the human interaction. It was good for me.
Yeah. Well, you go out and speak now, don't you? I know you were doing a workshop at the Desiree Alliance conference.
Yeah, upcoming one on privacy for escorts, or for sex workers, I'm sorry, not specifically escorts.
Private. You're going to be doing a workshop called Privacy for...
I forgot the actual title. It's kind of a long one. But, yeah, essentially it's just privacy for sex workers, personal privacy.
So you mean like anonymity or...
Just connecting your real information from your work information so that you can avoid, like, stalkers, for instance.
Let's talk about that for a little bit because, you know, I get very frustrated when people say, oh, well, she's wearing sunglasses and a wig. She must be ashamed of something. What do you want to say about that, Amanda?
I don't think shame has anything to do with it. I think a desire for privacy is what it's all about.
Well, if she's so proud of what she does, why does she want to be private about it?
Everyone wants to be able to go to the grocery store and not be bothered.
Yeah.
You want to pay your electric bill and not be bothered.
When you're talking about stalkers, I mean, I know for me, I've got a little file of stalkers, and I got a post office drop so that when they did stalk me, they would just find they were at a mailbox delivery place. You know,
mm-hmm.
They wind up at mailboxes, et cetera, or something, not my house.
Yes, that's one of the most important things right there is to get a different address, get it in a different name, if at all possible, and get a cell phone that you don't care about tossing.
And I think this would be a great thing for women who are just dating recreationally, not professionally, don't you think?
I think so because, I think it's probably more likely that women who are simply dating are going to run into nuts because they usually don't screen or back check the guy and they often ignore their own instincts about the guy. So I think they're more likely to run into dangerous situations.
I agree. You know, the 4 years that I was in college, I ran into 2 date rapists. In 4 years. And in 14 years of escorting, I only ran into a serial rapist 1 time. And the encounter with the serial rapist was far less traumatic than those 2 date rapists in college. For me, if you're playing the numbers game, I found college was really hazardous to my health.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes, because you're young and you don't care or you don't think that you're in any real danger and you put yourself in bad situations. Oh yeah. I mean, the rape rate on campuses is just so high.
It is, and it's not something people like to talk about. You know, especially even when I say that, you know, there's still this little bit of shame that comes up like, oh, I should have been smarter. I must have done something wrong. And I think that kind of shame keeps women from talking openly about whether they've been sexually abused or raped or harassed. You know,
well, I also think it ties into what I've been discussing with another friend of mine. We call it the whore stigma. I think a lot of the reasons that, say, women who are dating aren't so concerned about their safety is because they think the only one who has to be concerned about meeting a strange man is a whore. Because she's doing something wrong, but I'm not doing anything wrong, so I don't need to be concerned about it.
that's exactly the attitude that I was getting from this reporter who was asking me, oh, but aren't you, you know, how do you do that? You're meeting guys on the internet. And I go, yeah, like you don't. I'm like, give me a break. I mean, you know. who do you think's on all these dating websites? But there is this attitude like, well, if I'm a good girl, however you define that, I'm a good girl, so nothing bad will happen to me.
Yes.
And then if something bad does happen to you, even though you're a good girl, then you kind of internalize that and go, well, I must have done something bad.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that definitely stops a lot of conversation that we need to have and a lot of awareness that women need to have.
I think so, too. I want to check in with our listeners here just for a minute, Amanda. Don't go anywhere, but I want to remind people that this is, in fact, a call-in show. So if you want to call in and join the conversation, today being Tuesday, June 10th, and we're live right now, then please do so. If you're listening to this pre-recorded on the 16th, we'll be replaying this, and if it happens to be the 16th and you're listening to this, then you're not going to be able to call in. But check back the following Monday, because this is a call-in show. Those numbers are toll-free in the U.S. only, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. In U.S. and Canada, you can call toll-free at 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And if you happen to be local, it's area code 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. All right. Back to you, Amanda.
Okay.
So, what do you think about the intersection between the good girl and the bad girl, since we were getting off on that conversation, kind of, you know, the whore Madonna complex, women who try desperately to make sure they never get confused with being a slut or a whore, and women who pay the price for not being able to disassociate themselves from that stigmatized label. Do you have any opinions about that?
I see when it intersects in a person, as it has, I'm giving my own experiences here, because on the outward surface, I look young and innocent and sweet, and, you know, by societal standards, I am
not.
Oh,
you do. You look squeaky clean, baby.
Yeah, so it when people discover things about me, most of the time it intrigues them. It always shocks them. But sometimes they feel, you know, I'm deceptive, I'm sneaky, I'm, you know, some type of bad female stereotype. And the intersection of it can be very confusing. It's never been confusing to me because, I'm on the inside looking out, so it's not confusing to me. But I have seen it in other girls, escorts who will do certain sexual things, and then they'll not do other sexual things because they think not doing those particular things means they're good or they're clean.
Oh, and, yeah, like the dominatrix who never has sex.
Yeah, it's obviously they're still struggling with the whole Madonna whore thing. Regardless of where they draw their own particular lines, they're obviously struggling with the issues.
And there is always a line. That's one of the things I was teaching a workshop this last fall up in Seattle. It kind of has a banal title, workshop for men called How to Get Laid.
That should draw a lot of attention.
It did, actually. It drew a pretty good crowd. But one of the things that I talked to them about was I said, every woman has an if. She will have sex if. And you got to find out what her if is. And she may not know that she has an if. I found out that one of my ifs was that I would have sex if I was married and in love, or I would have sex if I was getting paid thousands of dollars.
I think my if is simply if I'm attracted to you enough to get aroused, I'll want to have sex with you.
Well, good for you. That is the attitude of the women who live in Moussois. The Moussois women, they live in, there's a little country to itself in the middle of China, and it's a matrifocal society. The women keep the property and they keep the money, and they never marry.
Oh.
And they have what they call walking marriages, and they will invite a man that they're attracted to spend a sweet night. And so the guy comes over for the night, and he's supposed to leave at daybreak.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not invited to stay, and it was so funny because they were interviewing, I found this on National Geographic or PBS, I forget now, and I haven't been able to find the video, which is driving me crazy, but it was just great. Interviewed this young woman, she's probably about 18, and she says, you know, some of the men from outside of her village will approach her, and they think because these women never marry and they have sex whenever they want to, that they're just going to have sex with anybody that asks. And she says, she's repulsive guys come up to me and ask me for sex, and I look at them and I just go, "You think you're attractive?"
Oh, good for her. Oh my God.
And I thought to myself, right there in just that one candid, off the cuff remark from this young woman who grew up in a culture that is so totally different than my culture, there is so much empowerment in those words that I have never experienced. That I have been trained to worry about his male ego and don't hurt his feelings.
Yes, I can't even imagine myself at 18 saying that, even if I were thinking it, because I can't even imagine it. That is just so wonderful that she's so confident at such a young age that she's perfectly comfortable, directing her own life.
Oh, it oozed from every pore. I was so jealous. I was like, what does that feel like? And then also to just be able to say, well, yeah, I have sex if I find you attractive. I don't find you attractive.
Yeah, now go away.
Yeah. How many times I have found myself in a situation where I would actually be being pressured by some guy in college because he found out I'd had sex with some other guy in college.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be like, well, you had sex with him. Why won't you do it with me?
And yes, or simply you kind of feel sorry for the guy. That's even worse, the pity sex.
Yeah. But there's also this really horrible thing going on in the backdrop that I think we never talk about as women, which is that somehow or another, if I open the door to sex, I will lose my right to say no to sex.
Yes. And that's the most horrible thing that you see in rape cases. The fact that the woman ever had sex in her life at any point means that she couldn't possibly be raped. I mean, I see this over and over again in rape trials.
Yes.
It just sickens me. They always use her past sexual history. What about the rapist's past history of rape?
Well, we still have, in a patriarchal society, we have still got a property approach towards a woman's privates. It's all about whether or not those privates have lost their worth. And what is their worth? It's usually attached to virginity or childbearing capacity. And then a woman doesn't really own her privates. It either belongs to her dad, or then it belongs to her husband. Or if she starts, renting them out, if that's what the way you want to look at it, which, of course, I never did. But if you look at it that way, well, suddenly, all of a sudden, then apparently she doesn't get to hang that sign that most shopkeepers get to, "We reserve the right to refuse service to anyone."
Yes.
You know? I certainly did.
Yes. Oh, this was an experience. Just recently, I went to a swingers club, actually. And I was, checking things out, and a guy bought me a bottle of water, which was really nice, but I just chatted with him briefly. You know, he was not attractive to me. And the bartender wondered why I wasn't willing to go and, do anything with him. And I thought to myself, he just bought me a bottle of water.
He knew how much you used to charge.
Yeah, well, you mean, was that supposed to be so cheap? I didn't like him. I wasn't attracted to him.
I know.
It just blew my mind that she would even think this.
You know what? It goes to one of my theories, which is that I believe that most marriage is approached as if it were prostitution, and not the empowered professional type of prostitution, but basically the idea being that once you're married, your spouse owes you sex. They don't get to say no either. And
yes, I ran into that in my prior relationship.
Did you? where you felt like you better kick it down or else?
Yes, it was part of apparently part of our contractual agreement. No, we weren't married, but
and he forgot to tell you, huh?
But yeah, it was part of our relationship that I really didn't get to say no because apparently I was saying no too often because I just wasn't feeling it, to be frank.
Yeah.
And that was a source of quite a lot of tension.
Oh, it must have been painful for you.
Yeah, you know, it got away.
You know, I one of the things that I can remember feeling so empowered as an escort was here somebody would hand me, you know, a check for $15,000, and then I'd turn around and say no to something. It's like, who the hell do I think I am? I had a client one time. We were having one of those slow, wonderful five-course dinners at a restaurant, mm-hmm. you know, and I'd known him for about 10 years, and he's sitting across from me, and he says, you know, I was seriously thinking about never seeing you again. He says, your rates are too high, and you're impossible to get along with. And then he started to get tears in his eyes, and his lips started to quiver. And he looked at me and he says, but you know what? I decided I need to have at least one person on this planet who will say no to me.
How interesting.
Well, you know, for some of these guys, they are just wealthy enough and powerful enough and influential enough that they've run out of those type of people.
And it is interesting that the only one who will say no is a sex worker who feels empowered enough by her sex work to say no.
I found that the more I said no, the more opinionated and outspoken I got, it is the more money I made. And I started feeling sorry for these guys' wives and girlfriends because I was thinking, you know, I bet they are just worrying themselves sick how they can please this man.
Men do like strong women, but unfortunately the wrong type of man just wants to tear that woman down. But men are very attracted to strong women, I've noticed.
That's the one. They're attracted to it. It fires their libido. They will pay thousands of dollars to sleep with it, but they don't want to marry it.
Mm-mm. I have a friend. Now, I have a friend who says, don't take the roller coaster home from Disney World.
Don't take the roller coaster home from Disney World. That's cute. Yeah. But you do want to ride it, don't you?
It just doesn't fit in the driveway the same as your car.
No. No, but I mean, this is what I found is that basically, you know, if you ever watched that film Dangerous Beauty, which was
yes.
about the life of Veronica Franco,
mm-hmm.
Renaissance courtesan. I thought it expressed this whole dichotomy so well because her mother realizes she is way too intelligent and way too feisty and opinionated to ever be somebody's wife. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the Renaissance period, wives were not allowed to read books. They were not allowed to go to college. So instead, she teaches her how to be a courtesan. And as a courtesan, she's allowed to go to college, read, write her memoirs, debate men publicly, and even take up fencing. All of these really masculine traits that she's allowed to adopt. And the men pay her tons of money, and she becomes very wealthy and powerful. And anyway, and I'm not going to give away the ending of the movie to our listeners, but the point being that although we would like to think, you know, it is now 2008, so women have become very liberated, I still feel that we have some of the remnants of those kind of splits between women, where when I was working as an escort, I felt like I was getting paid to be the feisty, you know, somewhat masculine, independent woman who fires libidos, while he went home to his docile wife who basically did not rock the boat and was not perhaps really alive and empowered around her own sexuality, was desperately still trying to cling to the good girl thing. Mm-hmm. And maybe especially if her husband's wealthy and powerful and domineering, might be more prone to say yes to him than I ever would be.
Yes, it's because as you become a prostitute or escort, however you want to call it, you do, I think you talked about this in your keynote, you step outside of society, and it offers a completely different perspective, and one that I think can be very powerful and refreshing.
Yeah. For me, liberating.
Yes, there's a lot of freedom there. There's a lot of freedom in not having to worry about playing the right game anymore. You play your own game.
There's penalties, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
Hopefully none that you had to pay, but I personally went to jail for prostitution. It was just overnight, not a big deal. It went away, but it was still, great.
Yeah.
They immediately evicted me from the apartment that I was working at. Unfortunately, I was already a homeowner by then, so again, not a big deal, but a little humiliating. And then I got audited very quickly after that, like 6 months later, to get the feeling that it's like they were all communicating with each other. Okay, let's arrest her, evict her, and audit her.
Yes.
Yeah.
But again, is that because you're a criminal or because you're out of line and they hope you get back into line like you ought to?
Oh, I think it's very much the latter, because like when I got arrested, I was laughing about the whole thing. I smiled from my mugshot and my arresting officer said, "You are hardened."
Oh, God.
They wanted me to cry and be ashamed. I just couldn't do it. It's like,
yeah,
okay, great.
They're hardened.
I've never met a street prostitute. I get to sit in jail with a bunch of street prostitutes for 9 hours. I think I'm going to go get educated in what their lives are about. So that's what I did. I just sat there and listened.
That's what I would do.
I'll tell you something. I sure found out that some of the stereotypes didn't hold. Like, these women, to me, did not impress me as being drug addicts at all. We had a drug addict in the tank with us, and she stood out as being a drug addict. But the prostitutes they were like poor women of color who were young mothers.
Oh, yes. Yes.
That's what I saw. Poor women of color, young mothers.
Yeah, most sex workers that I've known have been mothers, single mothers.
Yeah, and they were worried about, so I think a city like San Francisco is burning $11 million a year to put poor women of color through their prostitution arrest. And then they just put them right back out on the street with a $500 fine and say, hey, go make the $500 so you can pay us. Guess where that money's coming from? So San Francisco Vice is also a pimp, right?
Yeah, I've always thought, even as a teenager and, reading about prostitution, I always thought that was very bizarre, because I thought if they're trying to stop prostitution with arrest, there's only one job the woman can do to make the money to pay the fine.
Yes. Exactly.
I always wondered about the wisdom of that.
You're spending $11 million per major city in the United States to do this. Wouldn't it be better to take that money and open up daycare for these? Since they are young mothers, most of these women are trying to support their kids. Give them daycare, domestic violence awareness. Almost every single one of these women was getting beat by their pimp. And, of course, they don't call it their pimp. They call it their daddy.
Oh.
And so it's institutionalized domestic violence. They don't have any awareness of their rights as women. But most domestic violence shelters won't take a working prostitute. It's against the law. So where do they go? Where do they go? I mean, if we really want to help these women, they need to not have an arrest record so somebody else will actually hire them.
Yes.
It's crazy. It's hateful, I think. It's very hateful.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it didn't hurt me. I mean, I'm white. I'm college educated. I have a lot of opportunities and choices, and I can do anything I want. But for somebody who has limited resources, this is pretty much just making sure that they will have to stay in prostitution for the rest of their life.
Yeah, I wonder. I'm sure you've pointed this out before. Has anybody ever said, yes, you're right, or yes, that's a good point?
A friend of mine who works in domestic violence was horrified because she thought that prostitutes could get in, and then I wrote her back and I said, not if they're working. I mean, she's going to have to lie and say that she quit working. And she was like, well, okay, yeah, you're right. She would have to lie in order to be able to come into the shelter. But, you know, a lot of people have to lie in order to qualify to come into the shelter. That's not a big deal. And I was thinking, well, I don't know. I mean, one thing I know about prostitutes, they tend to be pretty honest people.
Yeah.
I think that's why they get into so much trouble. They just don't know how not to be honest. You think about it, you know. There's a lot of people that have worked prostitution a little bit here and a little bit there to get them wherever they were going.
Mm-hmm.
As we know, some of them are political interns.
Really?
Sure. Remember that big flap? Was it a couple years ago? It was
Jessica.
The Washington intern who turned out to be an online escort. He was a male escort.
Oh, that one. Okay.
Yeah. And then of course there's always rumors about some big name actresses who've, you know, had the word prostitution in order to get. And you never know how real or unreal some of that is, but it stands to reason. I mean, a lot of the
Okay. I think that was my phone.
Are you running out of battery, hon?
Yeah. Can you call me back on the alternate number?
On your cell phone?
Yeah.
We can. We've got like another 6 minutes here. But I can have the station call you back.
Okay, yeah. Call me back on my...
Hey, Amanda.
Okay.
Sorry about your telephone problems there. We're actually about out of time. Do you want to tell our listeners where they can find your book, hon?
Yes. Just go to escortmba.com, and it's right there. And there's a blog and plenty of other information on that site.
Okay. Give it out one more time.
Escortmba.com.
All right. Cool. And email address if they want to email you?
Ms. Brooks at Golden Girl Press.
Sounds great. I wish you continued success with your books.
You.
I think what you're doing is wonderful, and I love your guts. And thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thank you. Sorry about that.
No problem. We'll have you back on here when you come out with your second book, okay?
Great.
All right, Amanda. Much love.
Thank you.
Bye, hon. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Please check in next Monday. I'm here every Monday at 9:00, and I'm out for now. Bye.
Veronica Monet offers help, healing, and hope in the form of private telephone sessions. Email veronica@sexwithoutshame.com to schedule an appointment, or visit www.sexwithoutshame.com to find out what Veronica can do for you.